I'm Lisa Birnbach, sitting in for Leonard Lopate. At the age of 24, Amy Silverstein was an energetic law student balancing classes and a new romance. At the same time, she began to experience shortness of breath, erratic heartbeats, temporary blindness, and blackouts. Despite these symptoms, she never suspected that within the year she would be on the receiving end of a heart transplant. Now, 19 years later, she has surpassed her doctor's predictions of life expectancy by more than 9 years. She shares this story in her memoir, Sick Girl. It is published by Grove Press, and I'd like to welcome Amy Silverstein to the Leonard Lopate Show today. Hello.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you.
I'm scared of getting you too excited.
No, I get plenty excited on the treadmill and at the gym, so no worries.
So you are a miracle. Your existence is a miracle. When did you first begin to exhibit the symptoms of heart failure?
Well, I was in my first year of law school, and I was passing out occasionally, and I also had some palpitations, and I went to see my family doctor, who took my blood pressure and said, oh, you have low blood pressure. That's why you're passing out. And the palpitations, you're a nervous law student. Calm down, Amy. And sent me on my way and told me to salt my food to lift my blood pressure. But these symptoms continued, and a year later, they became more severe. I even started vomiting blood, and I went back to him, and at that point, I had the telltale signs of a very troubled heartbeat.
As it turns out, you were a very, very sick girl.
Yes.
And also an angry girl.
Yes, I was. You know, I was 24 years old, and at 24, I think people have an expectation that they're going to be well. And I had that expectation, and really, I became a sick girl. And although I have this miracle heart, which has saved my life, and I am tremendously lucky and grateful to be alive, I do live sick every day and have since my surgery. So it's not the way you think life is going to go when you're 24.
No, certainly not. When you were number one on the waiting list for a heart transplant, how long did you have to wait to get the actual heart?
I was very, very lucky in that I was so sick. I know it's kind of a funny way of looking at it, but I was lucky that I was so ill that I had to stay in the hospital and wait for the heart. And I immediately pretty much went to number one on the list. And even then, it still took about 2 months to get the heart.
And there was a chance, was there not, that you might not live to see the heart?
There was a very good chance. In fact, they were coming in and saving me almost on a daily basis with a defibrillator. I would go into a lethal arrhythmia, and they would come in and shock me back to life. And one time they actually lost me, and I flatlined, which is quote-unquote death. So I didn't know at all if I would make it, really didn't think I would make it to get the heart.
I'm talking with Amy Silverstein. Her new book is Sick Girl. I'm wondering, at a certain point, did you just decide, I'm going to die, this isn't working, there's no point in being hopeful, I'm just gonna tootle on to the great beyond?
While I was waiting for the heart, did I feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
There did come one particular day after waiting for 2 months where I just couldn't take it anymore. It was really horrible being so ill and being saved by defibrillators. I kind of got to that edge where I said, I can't do it. Mm-hmm. And it was very strange, but the heart came through that afternoon. It was really when I hit the wall was right when it came through.
The idea of a heart, of living with someone else's heart, too,
yeah,
must be a strange connection to a stranger, and somebody had to die for you to live.
Yes.
All things you've thought about.
Yeah, I think about it a lot. I feel tremendous gratitude for this donor heart. And there was a very young girl, I believe she was 13, who died. And I have her heart, which serves me tremendously well. And I feel indebted to this heart. And I eat right, and I exercise, and I take very, very good care of it because it is a gift. And I feel that I don't want to waste it. I have to give it the best shot it can get.
What does that mean when you say you take good care of it?
Well, I take a lot of immunosuppressive medicines, which are not fun to take for heart transplant, that turn my immune system off so that I don't attack my own heart. And I take those religiously. And it's very easy to say, you know, I think I won't take it today. And I never do that.
Now, why would you even consider not taking an immunosuppressant?
I know many patients who will skip them every so often. They make me feel terribly ill. And if I have, for instance, this interview today, I don't want to take my medicine and come into this interview and not feel well. Gee, I'd like to just not take it this morning, but I'm not going to do that. And I know that some patients do, you know, skip their medicines occasionally.
Amy, you feel that sick every day if you don't take your meds?
If you do take your meds. I feel sick every day. I do. They are very serious medications. Different patients feel ill to different degrees. I feel very ill. And also the other thing that I've written about in the book is that my heart is not attached to my central nervous system. It is denervated. They can't reattach nerves. So my heart does not work the way yours does. It doesn't run according to my central nervous system sending a message telling it to speed up or slow down. So my resting pulse when I'm very calm is 100. I tie my shoe, it's 130. And that is a very disconcerting and difficult feeling. So I never feel well, and I never feel at ease.
I was going to ask you, you must be so conscious of your pulse and of things that we all take for granted.
I'm very conscious of it, and because of what I went through when I was sick, meaning that I know what a bad heartbeat feels like, and I know that there is a very thin line between, gee, I don't feel well, and, gee, they're coming at me with the defibrillators, mm-hmm. that is triggered in my mind all of the time as mm-hmm. I walk around on a daily basis. I walk up the steps of the subway, and I think about, am I okay or am I not?
And that is a constant you've lived with since you were 24.
It is a constant, and I wish that the doctors could tell me at this point, you know, Amy, your heart is fine. Nothing is going to happen to you. But they can't tell me that because no. I have lived past the point of their predictability, and they sort of throw their hands up and say, Amy, you're in uncharted waters, and we're happy to navigate them with you, but we don't know.
So in other words, 9 years ago,
yeah.
at the point at which your heart was supposed to give out, mm. Were they planning to put a new heart in you?
No. What happens is, at most patients, somewhere around 10 years, you start to get an artery disease that actually ruins the heart and you need a new one. And most people will not get a new one because the waiting lists are so difficult. But some patients live beyond 10 years. Some don't make it to 10 years. Some do live beyond 10 years. But then you make it to 15 years, and then it gets really scary.
How does that affect you on a daily basis? You wake up and think, this is it? Or, I mean, how much is mortality part of your living?
It's a big part of my living. And I go to sleep at night and think to myself, what did I do today that gives me reassurance that I'm okay? Well, I jogged a couple of miles. I'm probably okay. And then each year I have an angiogram and a heart biopsy as well. And those results will tell me whether I'm living or not.
The book is so graphic. Now, one question I want to ask is how you can recall the procedures and the basic feel of the doctor's appointments you had right. 19 years ago, because my recall of what I said to a doctor last week are kind of blurry.
Right.
But the pain of a heart biopsy yeah. in which you're not sedated.
Right.
And they take a little.
Yeah.
It was really well written and impossible to read without cringing.
Yes, heart biopsies are very, very difficult to abide. And I've had, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 of them in my life. And I know they're doing a lot of research to come up with alternatives, but they haven't yet. You know, the truth is you do what you have to do in all situations in life. And, you know, you cringe and you get through it. But they do take pieces of your heart out. They go in through the neck and they pull out small pieces and you feel them yanking at your heart.
Oh.
But the other side of it is I'm alive. I have a working heart, and I should have been dead at 25. So will I do the biopsies? Absolutely.
You know? Oh, my. Yeah, I guess it's a small price to pay. By the way, a listener has written in that she worries that all this talk about sickness and what you've been through will discourage people from right. donating their organs. And she is herself the recipient of a transplanted heart. I'm sure that occurred to you as you were
Absolutely,
writing.
Absolutely. But mm-hmm. I have to say that because of this book, I have been able to speak in many places. I've been on television and there have been many articles, and transplant is getting a lot of attention. And at the end of any place where I speak or I've been on television or at the end of any article I've written, I have talked about the importance of organ donation. So I think to just get it out there, you know, people don't talk with their families about it.
There is something uncomfortable about it, but, you know, people don't want to talk about writing a will either.
Who wants to?
Right.
And you know, the truth is that heart transplant, and I can only speak to heart transplant, I don't know what it's like to be a liver transplant, is not a miracle cure. It's a miracle. It saves lives. But you don't dance off into the sunset and feel wonderful. But I have to believe that organ donors will see very plainly, I should have been dead at 25. I'm 44 years old. Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Is that worth donating your organ? You know, that I'm a mother and a sister and a member of the community and a wife and a daughter.
All around good girl. Yeah. No, and a musician.
Yeah,
all of it. I'm talking with Amy Silverstein. Her new book is Sick Girl, the story of her life with a transplanted heart, and it's published by Grove Press. And she is here despite and because of a very, very sick heart that was not part of family medical history, was it?
Well, it turns out that it was a genetic defect that I had. We didn't know it until they did an autopsy of my heart after the operation. And they didn't tell me about the results of this autopsy until about 16 years after my surgery. It came up in conversation with a doctor. I guess they didn't think it was important. But I was born with a genetic defect, the kind that you hear about when a young person dies on a basketball court and they say, what happened? That's pretty much what I had. Yeah.
So, it's a good thing you weren't playing basketball.
It's a good thing. You know, yeah. I really didn't play too many hard sports, and it is a good thing. So I am fortunate in so many ways. And there has been some criticism of this book that I've been called ungrateful. And you know, the truth is I'm tremendously grateful. And there is just a flip side to, you know, transplant that I think is important to talk about. There is a conflict, an inner conflict of living with heart transplant, living the miracle on the one hand, and having your life saved, and on the other hand, living a very sick life from a young age.
Yes.
And, you know, there's gratitude right alongside struggle.
I'm wondering how your youth and petiteness and perkiness worked against you when you were first experiencing these weird maladies.
It's interesting. It definitely worked against me. My doctor took one look at me as I bounced into his office with my law books over my shoulder and told him how I was having palpitations. And it was, oh dear, you know, calm down. You're a nervous law student. And, you know, what works against me now, you know, you look at me and you probably think, she's great. You know, she looks fine.
You mean, yeah.
But I'm not fine. As a matter of fact, I'm not well today. I was sick all weekend. And people just don't know. And sometimes I have to remind my doctors even now.
But doctors weren't taking you seriously early days.
You were
pretty much screaming at them.
Yeah, I was screaming. But when a doctor tells you, you're fine, you want to believe them. You know, and especially when you're young. So I did say, look, I'm feeling this. And the minute he gave me a way to think that I was fine, I took it and ran with it, you know.
You were in the beginning days of a big romance when you were diagnosed with heart failure, congestive heart failure. Your boyfriend was going to law school in Philadelphia. He was an angel.
Yeah.
How come he wasn't scared off by you? You were rude to your doctors, you were a long-distance girlfriend, and you were sick.
Well, you know, the truth is, the rude to the doctors, I think I was my own worst enemy in writing this book because, you know, the truth is that for every time that I blew up at someone over these 20 years, there were hundreds of times where I acted with grace and with kindness. So, you know, let me just say that. So my husband, you know, I'm not this crazy person that runs around screaming at people. There was a lot of me to love. And I think my husband is a man who is capable of love in a way that I still don't understand it. And at 25, he could do it. I mean, what 25-year-old guy is going to hang around with a girl who's going to be a sick girl for the rest of her life?
I wish you had a picture of Scott in the book because he looks like somebody we should all have as a poster child.
Yeah, he really is. He's incredible. Yeah.
One of our listeners has commented on the fact that your illness is invisible, unlike somebody with crutches or wheelchair or a tracheotomy or something.
Right.
Is there a misunderstanding? Yeah. Because it's invisible to the eye?
Yes, and I write about that in my book. I call it a mask that I wear, and I do wear the mask. You see that my posture is erect, and I try to give the impression of being a well person. I try very hard, but that backfires because then you try hard, and then nobody knows that you're sick, and they expect you to, you know, hang out with the gang till midnight. Why don't you want to hang out, Amy? You know, so.
But does that mean that you have to lead with your heart? I mean, in other words,
yes.
The headline is always, I'm Amy, I'm sick.
Right.
Or not.
I It is not at all. Prior to this book, I mean, even my good friends read this book and said, we had no idea. I don't want to wear my heart transplant on my sleeve. You don't get much from it. And you know what? If you're going to be sick for 6 months, you've got a bad back, you have an operation, and for 6 months, you're going to be a real pain to everybody. They'll put up with it. But this is permanent. And I want to have friends. And I want to have friends who can laugh around me and enjoy themselves. I want to have a husband. I want to have a child who's happy. If I wear my heart transplant on my sleeve, the people around me are not going to take that for very long.
Well, except when you write a book about it.
Well, I did write the book, and it's kind of my coming out that, you know, that there is a large degree of suffering in my life. But they also see that no matter the hardships that I face in terms of my medical challenges, I pick myself up and go on, even when my back is up against the wall. I mean, I write in this book how there was one point where I thought, maybe I'll just stop taking my medicines. I don't think I want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But as you see, I didn't give in to that. I just took a little while, pulled myself up, you know.
Were you afraid that the book would actually affect and change your relationships?
I wasn't afraid of that because I think that people know, you know, who I am, and they're not going to be hurt by it. It hasn't changed any. It has improved my relationships with my doctors, actually.
Uh-huh.
My transplant cardiologist has softened, and I think he's learned a lot. And I think other doctors who have read this book, I've gotten letters from several doctors, ones that I know and ones that I don't know, that they have learned a lot. So.
Well, it's in cold, hard print now. You know, you can't mistreat a patient who knows how to write a book.
I
think that's not wise.
Yeah.
In terms of doctor-patient relationships, do you think that patients are not good enough advocates for themselves in general?
I think in general that is true, and especially young women, I would think. You know, we just hand ourselves over at these appointments, and really you can't do that at all. You can't afford to hand yourself over. You have to bring your intuition with you. You know, I knew when I went to that doctor the first time with those symptoms that there was something wrong. I look back in my journals. I keep a writing journal, and I even wrote it, there's something wrong with me. So it's very, very important that you just realize doctors are human beings. And you know your body better than they do.
Well, and on the other hand, we tend to venerate doctors.
Mm.
So if they tell us something, we assume. I mean, I had a medical crisis, and I would say to my doctors, but I was an English major. How am I supposed to decide what to do?
Right. Well, you don't have to decide what to do, but you have to give them the information that only you have, and that is how you feel about your body, how you sense whether it's right or wrong. And when the doctor told me that my palpitations were due to nervousness, I'm not nervous. I was always a hardworking student. I knew it, but I'd let him get away with that. So while you can't, you know, you don't have a medical degree, you have a degree in your own body,
mm-hmm.
and you can close your eyes and kind of feel what's going on, and you need to share every bit of it. Look, I was vomiting blood, and I thought I had a stomach problem. That vomiting blood was because of a heart problem. I didn't even want to mention the vomiting blood,
mm-hmm.
so you have to tell them everything.
I have to say, reading your book, it does make one grateful for the heart one has and the body one has. And appreciate every day we have because you know what it's like to feel like you may not have too many.
Yes.
Amy, it's nice to see your smiling face nonetheless. My guest is Amy Silverstein. Her book is Sick Girl, published by Grove Press. And it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
the book is published by Grove. Yeah, I just mentioned that. And no exciting loud noises for you, okay?